Cap.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, filling in for Tony D. Here's Mike Gill.
We got a lot of information for you in our final hour of the program. 800-777-2907. Mike Gill in for Tony D. SB Nation AM at Mike Gill Show on Twitter. Give me a follow there at Mike Gill Show on Twitter. U.S. and France face off in the quarterfinal showdown of the Women's World Cup. And the United States carrying a 9-game win streak in Women's World Cup heading into the quarterfinal showdown today against the host nation in France. It's the only team to beat the United States in any match since 2017. In fact, the United States is 36-1-5. In its last 42 matches in competitions, with the lone loss coming in a friendly earlier this year, 3-1 against France. This will be the first time that the U.S. faces the host nation at a Women's World Cup. Think about that. And it comes at this one in France against the last team that beat them. They're the two favorites. This match pits the two favorites to win the World Cup, and the United States leads the head-to-head series 17-3-3 versus France all time. However, France is unbeaten in its last three matchups with the United States, 2-0-1. The only previous Women's World Cup meeting between these teams, believe it or not, was back in the 11 semis, and the U.S. beat France 3-1 in that one. And that one is later today. And, of course, the U.S., that 9-game win streak on the line today in France against the host team, France. The betting favorite in the game is the United States, but slim. So, should be a good one.
The only bummer to this is that this should have been the final.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who were hoping that this would have been the final, but you get them in the quarters.
And I'm just curious at how FIFA, you know, everyone knew that this was the final that they wanted beforehand, how FIFA was able to manage to mess this up.
There's no corruption in FIFA.
None at all.
When we come back, we're going to look at quarterbacks in the AFC West. And then Keith Smith, Yahoo NBA writer, going to join us to break down. He's going to tell us where every free agent's going. You don't even need to wait till Sunday.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, filling in for Tony D, here's Mike Gill.
I've been enjoying these quarterback previews we've been giving you because I get to really dive into the NFL, which we are less than a month before. What's more anticipatory? The NFL training camp opening up, or NBA free agency? That really shouldn't be a conversation, but that's how big the NFL is, right? I mean, training camp, the minutiae of training camp should not be exciting, but we love the NFL so much that it actually is exciting. But NBA free agency is going to be epic. This is going to be awesome. And I know when Tony D's back, Mike Gill, in for Tony D, SB Nation AM. He's going to have so many storylines. We're just setting them up for you. Keith Smith, great writer, great cap guy, great NBA guy, coming up in just about 12 minutes from now to break it all down for us. We'll get the latest on where all these guys may go, the storylines to look for this weekend. But first, let's get back into these quarterbacks. We've been breaking down all week long the divisions and the quarterback rankings here, and we're going to go AFC West. Very intriguing. We've got a superstar, if you will. We've got a Super Bowl champion. We've got an enigma, and we've got an old wily veteran. Let's start there. Phillip Rivers, 12-4, the Chargers. Seems like a lot of people think this could be a favorite. A lot of people think they could be a Super Bowl team. Melvin Gordon, Mike Williams, Travis Benjamin, Keenan Allen, Hunter Henry. This is a great offense here, and it's all led by the trigger man, Rivers. When it's all said and done, the unfortunate of this will be if Rivers walks away and doesn't win a Super Bowl. Will he retire soon? You know, Eli slowing down. Roethlisberger just signed that extension. And Rivers, 37 years old. He's the one of that group that's never won anything, but arguably maybe the best of the group. Had one of his best years ever. 32 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, 4,300 yards, 12-win season. He says he has every intention to be on the Chargers next season. He's in the final year of his contract, making $19 million. But the way Rivers is going, I'm a big fan of Rivers. It's so unfortunate that he has never won anything there. But this could be the year. Old faithful Rivers. If you go back to that draft class of 04, Rivers was the fourth pick. You have Roethlisberger and Eli. Eli has two, Roethlisberger a pair, Rivers none. But if you redrafted those guys, you might go Rivers one. You may go Rivers 1, Roethlisberger 2, and Eli Manning 3. Eli went 1 that year. Rivers went 4. And Roethlisberger was somewhere in the middle. But Rivers, old faithful, fun to watch, gunslinger, great mentality. It's just, you know, it's been an unbelievable ride that they have not been able to have a lot of success, period. Forget a Super Bowl. Just not a lot of playoff success, period. But this could be the year for them. But he's got a Super Bowl MVP champion in his own division now. Joe Flacco. Brutal last year. 9 games with the Ravens. He had an okay. I mean, 12 touchdowns, 6 picks, 2,500 yards. But couldn't get his job back when push came to shove. They didn't believe in him anymore in Baltimore. And they ended up going to the playoffs. Now, Flacco has kind of been an abrasive guy, and I have no interest in mentoring Drew Locke, who's the backup there. You know, by the way, Tyrod Taylor's the backup in L.A. with the Chargers. The backup here in Denver's been a mess. This whole quarterback situation in Denver's been a mess since, John Elway played. They just haven't been able to get it right. They got a playoff win. Now, Peyton Manning came in and won him a Super Bowl, but other than that, you know, 2-year stay, they just haven't had much. They tried it now with Flacco. Let's bring in an old guy who want to play a Super Bowl. Let's bring him in here and see if that formula works. Freeman and Lindsay in the backfield, nice pairing there. But the wide receivers are thin. Emmanuel Sanders, Cortland Sutton had a good year last year. But Flacco, no matter where he goes, it seems like he just doesn't have the weapons to show if he is anything more than just kind of a game manager. I think Denver with Flacco, you're going to start hearing people ask for Drew Locke. Kevin Hogan was even a name a couple of years ago, the Stanford kid. We'll see. But Flacco's the guy there. Locke's behind him, the second-round pick. Oakland, very interesting. Very interesting. Training camp, keep an eye on Oakland. Derek Carr's the guy there. The money suggests he is. You know, Derek Carr has, you know, last year, not a great year. 19 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, 4,000 yards, first year in the Gruden system. That's a step back. He looked like an up-and-comer. 19 touchdowns, 22 touchdowns, 28 touchdowns, 32 touchdowns. It's like last year he was going up and up and up, and then he just kind of, boom. I mean, his rookie season, he threw 21 touchdowns. Last year, he went down to 19. The year before, 22. It seems like he's taking steps back, not forward. And behind him, they brought in Nate Peterman, who I think has more interceptions than anyone in the history of the game on the fewest amount of passes. I mean, every time he drops back to pass, he throws an interception. There's another one. Peterman, in 4 games last year, had 1 touchdown, 7 picks, and 296 yards in 4 games. You talk about ineptitude. Peterman fits the bill. Those numbers across the board are total ineptitude in all facets of the game. 3.7 yards a pass, 54% completion, yet that's who's in Oakland right now. And Mike Glennon. You know, Glennon is a rich man based on a handful of games in Tampa. got a contract based on a handful of games in Tampa and went to Chicago, was going to be the starter, went to Arizona. Now he's in Oakland. But you know what? If Derek Carr falls out of favor in Oakland, don't be surprised if Mike Glennon gets a shot there just to kind of steady the place. My anticipation is that Carr will be fine. He's got Brown now. The Raiders are a very interesting team. Josh Jacobs, I like him at running back. Antonio Brown. But it's all Carr runs this thing. If Carr is the guy we saw last year, you're probably going to have a long year in Oakland. But if Carr was the guy we saw that got that big mega contract, you know, that big mega contract that he's that he got, now he's back there as the, you know, if he gets that deal and lives up to that contract and he's back there to that guy, they might be interesting. They might be interesting. And then there is Patrick Mahomes. I mean, what more can we say about what this guy did last year? He was the MVP, 50 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, 5,000 yards, 8 yards a pass, 66 completion percentage. He had better consistency than Drew Brees did in 2018 when he won the MVP. Patrick Mahomes had an all-time year last year. He took the league by storm. He was unbelievable. But I'm going to be interested to see if he can back it up. Who's going to run the ball there? Carlos Hyde, Damian Williams. Who's going to be on the other end of passes? Tyreek Hill will probably be suspended. Hunt is gone, so his running back, his receiver. You know, the top receiver when they start the year might be Sammy Watkins out there. First-round bust. Travis Kelce, great tight end. But Patrick Mahomes is going to be challenged to find out if he can regenerate, if you will, that 50-touchdown, 12-interception season without some of the weapons that he had 1 year ago. So in the division, right now, look, you got Rivers, Mahomes, a Super Bowl champion. This division is very intriguing when we talk quarterbacks. Right? I don't know which way you would go, but you got to go Rivers first. I can't disrespect Phillip Rivers like that. Phillip Rivers deserves to be the number one quarterback ranked in this division, and the best team could be the L.A. Chargers. You know, Rivers, by the way, what an unbelievable 374 touchdowns and 178 interceptions. For a guy who's a gunslinger, he's got a lot of picks, but 374 touchdowns to 178, he almost makes those picks feel like they've gone away. So he goes one, Mahomes goes two, and Mahomes, I'm very, very, very interested to see if he can double up on that year he had 1 year ago. So I'm going Rivers one, Mahomes two. We'll go Flacco with the Super Bowl trophy three, although I don't love it. And Derek Carr, show me something, number four. That division, very intriguing. We've got two teams, Kansas City and L.A., who have Super Bowl aspirations. Rivers and Mahomes are the reasons why. All right, that's a look at the quarterbacks in the AFC West. They've been fun. It's been fun talking a little football. But when we come back, four NBA players, all NBA players, highlight the 2009 NBA free agent class. Where will they land? You're about to find out when we come back with Yahoo Sports NBA writer Keith Smith. Mike Gill, in for Tony D. This is SB Nation AM.
SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Filling in for Tony D, here's Mike Gill.
All right, SB Nation AM, Mike Gill in for Tony D. Final day of my routine. Tony D's back on Monday morning. But before we get to Monday, we got to preview Sunday. And we will get into NBA free agency. Right now, talking a little NBA free agency, where will the faces land? Let's bring in Keith Smith, contributor for Yahoo Sports, covers the NBA, real GM. And let's talk a little bit about what will happen on Sunday. Keith, good day to you, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. All right. It's a big time of the year. We know that everybody's got decisions to make. I guess let's get your thoughts and start with the Jimmy Butler, Houston stuff, what we know and where we are at this stage of the game. At first, it seemed like, hey, we really want to talk Jimmy into this. But is it more and more looking like Jimmy Butler and the Rockets could be something there? Like, it sounds like the Sixers might comply and say, all right, we'll give into this. So where do you stand with the whole Butler to Houston theory right now?
Yeah, I think you have to look at it as almost having three parts. I think the Houston Rockets are being aggressive. They want to get Jimmy Butler, so it's on them to figure out a way to make it happen. Then you have Philadelphia, who I think is saying, well, if he doesn't want to be here, we're not, you know, against or opposed to the idea of figuring out a three-team trade. And then, of course, you have Jimmy Butler, who, at the end of the day, he has the most power here because he has to agree to want to go to Houston. And that seems to still be a little bit of a sticking point. We haven't heard definitively one way or the other that that's something Jimmy Butler wants to do. So that's going to be where it's going to be really interesting to see how this all plays out and comes together. My guess is the Rockets are making this much noise without having some understanding or inkling that Butler is at least interested. So this is going to be one of those things to watch here as we get into free agency opening on Sunday, because Houston may need to have a deal prearranged and lined up to get that all opened up, so then the other teams involved can do their work as free agency opens.
Yeah, that's the one thing that's a little crazy here, Keith, is that the Rockets are willing to trade key parts to other people without knowing, wink, wink, if Butler wants to go there or not, which kind of assumes that, hey, we'll trade away Eric Gordon or Clint Capella, two very important pieces to them, without any, you know, real guarantee that Butler would go there. That seems like risky business.
Yeah, and that's why I think we got to start to assume that if they're already making those moves, they've got Butler or somebody else lined up. And a lot of times at this time of year, right, there's plan A, B, and C. And if, you know, A falls apart, you move right on to B. So that could be the direction they're going. Daryl Morey's a really good GM. He's, you know, better than a lot of guys are at this. And, you know, he's good at figuring out how to maximize his, you know, minimal pool of assets, because that's really what he's working with right now. He doesn't have a lot of, he doesn't really have any picks to trade. His tradable contracts are kind of limited to, as you said, guys who are key rotation players. So I think you're going to see him do, he'll get some work done here, and whether it's Butler or not, I think the Rockets are going to look pretty different when they get into next season. So the other thing you have to be careful, this is now 3-4 times we've heard Capella and Gordon's name mentioned in various scenarios. Eventually hit a point of no return where you can't keep coming, bringing those guys back and saying, yeah, we never really wanted to move you anyway. At some point, the player's like, all right, I'm done.
Keith Smith, Yahoo Sports NBA, the NBA free agent period Sunday. What about the possibility of the Sixers offering Jimmy max money but not max years? Do you think that he would be willing to stay in Philly for less than the 5 years? Or at that point, does he make his decision and say, you didn't offer me five, you better take that Houston deal?
Yeah, the belief has been all along that he needs the full max deal. Now, it's important to remember, this guy's getting a little older. He has had some health issues throughout various points in his career. So I think locking in the full 5 years, if he's going to stay in Philadelphia, is important to him. And one of the things I go back to with Jimmy Butler, and I say all the time, is if you make your best offer your first offer. Like, just come in with whatever you're willing to do. Because if you don't want to come in and say, maybe we can only get him for 4 years, let's do that. Because this guy is, he's a crazy guy at times. And you don't want him feeling insulted by an offer and feeling like, you know what, I'm out. Like, you didn't value me enough. I want to go somewhere else. Or then you're stuck in a spot where he does sign it, but he's not happy, because we also have that turned out with Minnesota. So you're just going to be really careful here to make sure you get this thing done and done in the right way.
Keith, if you're the Sixers, do you take the Houston deal, or would you rather Jimmy walk, get nothing, and then recoup the cap space? So do the players that Houston give you, with maybe a pick, entice you more, or does freeing up cap space entice you more?
Yeah, I think if you can get Eric Gordon out of it and then a first-round pick from someone other than Houston, you know, as the third team in, I think you do take this because Eric Gordon, that's a good player to have in hand. He fits in really well with the guys who are already on the roster just because of his ability to shoot the ball from the perimeter and be a, you know, really a good scorer that would, you know, make them really tough. And I think you pivot to that. All right, we're going to re-sign Tobias Harris. We're going to re-sign J.J. Redick. And we're going to, you know, really build this thing forward from here with these guys that we have. Now, if you're forced to take on Clint Capela, I think you have a lot more question marks because this is nothing against Clint Capela. Good young center, good player, but he'd be a 15-minute-a-game backup in Philadelphia for $15, $16 million, and that's just a luxury you don't need. So at that point, you have to find a third team to take on Capela. Now, one other thing, if you can somehow finagle to get P.J. Tucker out of this deal, oh my gosh, would he fit in fantastic. He gives them, you know, that grit, that tough. He'd be beloved in Philadelphia with the way he plays the game of basketball. So if you could get Gordon and Tucker out of this, then you're feeling really, really good.
Okay, let's spin around. That's interesting. Let's and if I'm Elton Brand, I mentioned this earlier in the week. I would demand Tucker. I'd demand the three of them here. Keith Smith, Yahoo NBA. Let's spin around to some of these other guys. Get some thoughts from you. Kyrie, what do you got?
Yeah, so it seems like it's been lining. Kyrie's such a different guy. He's been, you know, it's confusing because it seems like we've zoned in for the last week or so that he's going to Brooklyn, and that's whether he's going there with Kevin Durant or by himself. But now that the Lakers have cleared essentially what is max cap space, they're a little bit shy, but not enough that a walk-on role in Space Jam 2 can't fix. So they are, you know, they're going to make a push, it sounds like, for Kyrie, and that adds a little bit of an unknown to the circumstances. I think for certain, now we know he is not returning to the Boston Celtics. It's just a question at this point, it seems to be, is he going to be a Brooklyn Net or is he going to be a Los Angeles Laker?
Kemba Walker replacing Kyrie in Boston. Is that what it sounds like, looks like? And does that actually make them better?
Yeah, that is what it sounds like. That's what it looks like. Kemba Walker, there's, again, Lakers, Max Kapsers, Reed Harrison, every one of these guys, are they interested in Kemba, too? And it's not that Kemba wouldn't be interested, but Kemba is made it pretty clearly known he's an East Coast guy. He grew up in New York. He went to school in Connecticut. Played in Charlotte, and that seems to be where he wants to be. And Boston seems to be the leader for him. And they're aggressive. They make cap space clearing moves to be able to pull this off. As far as making them better, I think it may. Now, in a vacuum, Kyrie Irving is a better basketball player than Kemba Walker. I have no doubt in that. But fit matters a lot of times over talent. And Kemba's ability to play off the ball, he's got any form of locker room distraction. There's none of that. So sometimes a little bit less, but sometimes a lot more. And I think that's what Boston is banking on here.
Agree. Got about a minute left with Keith Smith here. Why would the Wizards help out the Lakers? What were they thinking?
Yeah, they got a flyer on a couple young players and Mo Wagner and Isaac Bonga. The Wizards are in a position where they can't really acquire any young talent any other way. They did what they could through the draft, but they don't have any form of cap space. They're, you know, really in a cap mess for at least one more year. So this was a chance to take on a couple of guys and see what you have. So for them, it's really probably a no-brainer of, all right, yeah, we bring these guys in to play the trade exception and see what we got going forward. And, you know, I like that move for them because it really didn't cost them anything at all.
Keith Smith, contributor for Yahoo Sports NBA, at Keith Smith NBA. You can check him out on Twitter with all the NBA free agency happening. And he was kind enough to get up with us here on SB Nation AM. Thank you, Keith.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Keith Smith, NBA, and you can check him out, again, at Keith Smith, NBA. I'm Mike Gill. You can get me at Mike Gill Show. And as he said, the Kemba Walker, good fit. Maybe not as good a player, but maybe a better fit than Kyrie. The Washington thing still doesn't make sense to me. Yeah, they got their hands on a couple of young players, but why help out the Lakers? You're the Wizards. You're going nowhere. Don't help the Lakers out. When we come back, the All-Star Games, rosters, lineups, not the lineups, but the rosters have been announced, and other interesting MLB news and notes. Mel Antonin, Sports Illustrated, joins us.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios alongside Ron Culver. Filling in for Tony D, here's Mike Gill.
Good Friday to you. You know, on this day in 2007 and 2009, a pair of 500s. Frank Thomas of the Blue Jays hit his 500th homer. And in 2009, Mo Rivera had his 500th save. So it's a day of 500s. And we're going to look at some of the top Major League Baseball storylines now. 4th of July is coming. It is Thursday of next week. And with that, Mel Antonin from Sports Illustrated joins us to take a look, a closer look, at some of these great baseball stories, Mel, that are going on in baseball. I guess we should start with what's going on in Philly with the Mets and the Phillies and the Mets. I mean, what a bonkers series this was. Both teams came in with all sorts of crazy stories. Callaway and Kapler, there were questions of whether they would both be fired leading into the series. Well, the Phillies end up sweeping, and the Mets had all sorts of problems. Callaway almost looks like he wants to get fired when you watch these games. So the Phillies lost 7 in a row. Now they win 4 straight. Have the Phillies figured some things out? Or is it just because the Mets are that bad and that dysfunctional?
I think it's a little bit of both. The Mets just can't do anything. All the new players that they signed have not come through. The guards, there's been just a lot of injuries. And you can make a case when you saw Diaz give up the walk-off home run yesterday to Gene Segura. Interesting how they were former teammates in Seattle just a year ago. But you wonder if the Mariners didn't overuse Diaz because he doesn't look like he's the same pitcher. As far as the Phillies, they're getting better pitching. Nola pitched better. The Phillies have potential if they can get their bullpen healthy and their rotation back on track. But I think one of the biggest issues for Philadelphia has been scoring runs. They haven't been the same team since Andrew McCutchen went out for the season injured early in June. I think it was June 4th.
Yeah. Mel, it looks like I liken Mickey Callaway to the George Costanza when he's bodysuit man driving around the parking lot trying to get himself fired here. Do we anticipate this stare down having a resolution, or are the Mets just digging their heels in and saying, nope, you got money on that deal, you're not getting out of this thing?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's really a mess. I'm not sure what the Mets are going to do. You would think, in this case, just to cut down on the distractions, that they would hire a new manager and just get a fresh start, because they do have a lot of pitching. They do have some potential. But who knows which way they're going to go, and who knows who's really running the team. Part of the reason Mickey Callaway, the manager, I got so frustrated was that reporters kept honing in on the question on how is the team being run, who's making the decisions, are there guidelines from the front office, and that hit close to home.
Over in the National League East, we're staying in the National League East, I should say. The Washington Nationals are starting to play a lot better baseball. They've won 3 in a row, 8 out of 10, and they're, you know, 7 back in the East, but it seems like there's some signs that they're turning some things around out there. And the Braves have played really well. The Phillies were kind of early on hot. But can the Nationals kind of keep themselves around and make this thing interesting? And, 40-40, is there a move that they could make? They've got some very interesting storylines.
Yeah, I don't know if they really need to make a move. They could use more help in the bullpen. They haven't been at 500 since April 23rd when they were 11-11. And not long ago, they were 12 games under at 19-31. That was the low point. What's interesting about the National League East is that Philadelphia or Atlanta is leading the division, leading the Nats by 7 games, as you said. But the Nationals have all the pitching. The Braves have more pitching concerns than the Nats. Not just in a thin bullpen, but in the rotation as well. So pitching is so important, particularly in the rotation in the second half of the season. I don't think the Nats have to worry too much about a 7-game lead if the Braves don't address their pitching needs. Yes, they got Dallas Keuchel, but they got two young pitchers in Max Fried and Sirotka. Kevin Gausman is on the injured list. There's a lot of issues with the Braves pitching, and that could come to light in the second half of the season. The fact, though, that the Braves are playing really well and just pounding other teams with their offense, that's the way they've been winning in June, but that usually doesn't sustain itself over the long term.
Mel Anthony in Sports Illustrated, Major League Baseball. The Nats have been playing 700 baseball for about a month now. They've been really good, as Mel said. They were 19-31. But what about the Cubs? We saw Kimbrel yesterday touching the 98 on the gun. I mean, they're 44-37. They have a game lead in the Central. But, you know, the closing that you mentioned, Diaz, the Phillies bullpen problems all around baseball. Does the Cubs getting Kimbrel, you know, give them the advantage in that Central?
Yeah, it strengthened the team. St. Louis has just been inconsistent, and now one of their best relief pitchers, Jordan Hicks, is done for the season because of an elbow injury. Milwaukee's got issues with a thin rotation, even though they can hit the ball like crazy. So I think the Cubs have the potential for the best rotation. Their offense can be spotty, even though they got some big names. But adding Greg Kimbrel certainly fortifies their bullpen. Now Pedro Strop, who has been the closer, can be a very effective eighth inning man. Then you have Brad Brock, Steve Cishek, and Brandon Kinsler all in the setup roles for the sixth and seventh innings. So as long as the starters go six innings, which they're very capable of doing, the Cubs' bullpen is a lot stronger.
Well, Mel, we were talking a lot about NBA free agency and that Kemba Walker, you know, being in Charlotte and then maybe going to Boston, that this could be a whole new thing for him. I'm not suggesting that Milwaukee in baseball is some mega market, but when you're with the Marlins, you're virtually unknown. And Christian Yelich is now known. Is Yelich and possibly another MVP award for him, you know, is that enough for the Brewers to stay in this thing and kind of make this a very entertaining Central? Because Yelich is a guy that you would never even have known he played in Miami, but right now he might be the best player in all of baseball.
Well, he emerged in Milwaukee. He was developing very quickly with the Marlins, but no, he's obviously very important to the Brewers and their chances to win in the National League Central, but they can't do it without deep pitching and without a healthy bullpen. So it doesn't really matter how many runs you score if you can't pitch. I would rather have a strong pitching staff and a few fewer runs scored by my lineup than to have to count on the lineup scoring 6, 7, and 8 runs every day. But to answer your question, Yelich and Bellinger are probably the two top candidates for the National League MVP, and he might win a second consecutive.
Yeah, awesome story there. Mel, we got baseball in London, 10 o'clock Sunday morning, the Yankees and Red Sox, and they're playing this series in London. Number one, interesting move by baseball, kind of following a page from, you know, the NFL, and they've done these things in Japan, but having this London series, but putting their best two most recognizable teams there. I'm sure they're not thrilled about losing home games in New York and Boston, but, you know, the fact that they put their two most recognizable teams there, and the Yankees' injuries, Stanton's going to be out. You wonder if at what point the injuries finally catch up to that team, and the Red Sox have just not been able to really get going here. This one could be really a jumping-off point for both teams.
Oh, yeah. The Yankees have the best bullpen. The Yankees are really the only contender in all of baseball that doesn't need help in the bullpen, but they're certainly have some issues in the rotation. You don't know what Severino is going to bring in the second half at D if he comes back. Roman is out. C.C. Sabathia is pitching well, but he's 38. Tanaka, I guess, is, you know, Paxton's got the knee injury. There's a lot of issues with the Yankees' rotation. Half isn't what half was a year ago. So it's interesting that the Yankees need rotation help, and the Red Sox just, I don't know, they just need consistency all the way around. They're just not the same team that they were last year, and part of the reason was they used most of April as spring training, because spring training is not easy to do if you're playing into late November, so particularly with the pitching staff. But I think it's interesting these teams are in London. I think that's the fact that two most recognizable teams are there tells you that Major League Baseball sees London as a possible expansion somewhere down the road, because baseball is growing like crazy in London. A lot of young kids are playing baseball, and they wouldn't bring them over there just for, you know, unless there was some kind of future value.
That is very interesting. We talked earlier in the week, Mel, about baseball here in the States. I mean, at least in the Northeast, where I'm situated, you look at lacrosse, and there's like little leagues are dying and kids aren't playing, and at what point does that kind of cross over? And then you have London, where you're saying baseball is really exploding. So that's a very intriguing story. And we know there's a lot of markets here that are struggling. Tampa Bay is one of them. What is your take as a week is kind of the dust has settled in this whole story? Now, they're saying they're not trying to get a stadium out of this. We know they've been trying to get a stadium since their existence, but this Tampa Montreal thing, where do you feel, how do you feel that thing? Will it work out? What's Tampa's ploy here?
Tampa's ploy, I don't think having a team that plays in Tampa Bay and Montreal in the same season, splitting the season between the two cities, is viable or realistic. I think this is a political move by Major League Baseball and the Rays officials to tell the Tampa to tell politicians and office holders in Tampa Bay or in Tampa and St. Petersburg that, hey, we're serious. We need to get a new stadium or we're going to leave. It is amazing that the Rays have such a great team, such an exciting team, and they can only draw 10 or 12, 14,000 fans a night. But this, I don't think the Montreal-Tampa Bay idea is realistic. I think it's a political ploy by Major League Baseball to say Tampa either move or either fix, either get us a stadium or we're going to move out, because not only is Montreal hungry for baseball, Nashville's got Nashville would be interested, Portland would be interested, Charlotte would be interested, and maybe there would be even some international markets that are interested, like London. But no way, I cannot believe that Montreal would build an $800 million stadium for 40 games a year, and I don't think the people in Tampa Bay would do the same thing, whether it's St. Petersburg or Tampa. It's just not financially feasible to spend $800, $900 million on a new stadium and then have only 40 games a year. You wouldn't get your money back.
Interesting story there. All right, All-Star game. Did number one, this new system, did they get this thing right? Did they do a good job? And really, to you, Mel, guy's been covering the game for a long time. What has the All-Star game kind of become? Is it still something that is relevant and something that is exciting that people get look forward to?
I don't know if they look for, I don't know, when you look at it from a 60-year-old reporter's perspective as opposed to a 12-year-old fan, I don't know. I think the key is 12-year-olds and 13-year-olds watching the All-Star game. Do they get as excited as we did when we were kids? I can remember a day or two before the All-Star game, I was so excited I could barely breathe. Seeing like Willie Mays in Metropolitan Stadium in Minnesota in a gray San Francisco uniform, something like that. I think a little bit of the pageantry has been lost because they're so concerned about marketing. They're playing the games at night. Games go on forever. It's got a little league format as far as everybody gets to play. The games aren't as competitive. I mean, I think it's lost some of it, but again, I'm talking from a perspective of a 60-year-old reporter as opposed to a 12-year-old kid, and maybe kids across the country watch the All-Star game, but I tell you, the marketing and the promotion gets a little old.
Yeah, well, I'm 42, and I remember waiting to see, like, Mike Schmidt play or one Philly, because when I was growing up, you only got one Philly, and that used to feel like it was exciting. I'm not sure it is as exciting anymore, but the All-Star game's got a lot of great young players. We gave you the lineups earlier. Mel Antonin, Sports Illustrated, talking a little baseball here as the July 4th mark will be very interesting. And then the race to the deadline, which is July 31st. Mel, we appreciate it, pal. Thanks for chiming in.
Thank you for having me.
Mel Antonin, everybody here with you. SB Nation AM, Mike Gill in for Tony D. A little baseball talk to get your morning going. The baseball stories are great. The London thing, Mel opened my eyes a little bit with that by throwing the Red Sox-Yankee thing and the fact that, hey, maybe they're looking at London as a possible destination. You know, the NFL's been doing it. But Major League Baseball, to play there, to stay there for a week and do all that stuff, that would be interesting. The road trips, would London be a viable spot for Major League Baseball? I don't know, but what I do know is this. We got one more thing left for you here, and you're not going to want to miss it. It'll be my final segment of the week, as we say, hasta luego for this week here on SB Nation AM. I got one final segment coming up next.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Filling in for Tony D, here's Mike Gill.
Been a pleasure to do so all week long with Ron Culver, Mike Gill, in for Tony D, SB Nation AM. Get your weekend started off. You know, I saw a Jackie McMullen story, the great NBA columnist who wrote that the completion of the regular season, the Celtics set up 100 balls for charitable partners. Everyone signed them except Kyrie Irving. Pressed to do it, say sources, he was neither aggressive nor confrontational. He merely said, no, I'm not interested in that. I mean, seriously. And I go back to the conversation we had before Keith Smith joined the show a little while ago. You're upgrading by getting rid of Kyrie. Not player, but person. And if I can replace Kyrie, the player, with Kemba Walker, the person, I'm doing okay. Kyrie, get a clue. And I hope you go to the Knicks and ruin them too. Never mind. They're already ruined. It's been great. Ron Culver, I'm Mike Gill, in for Tony D. He's back on Monday, and I hope you enjoy your weekend. I'm at Mike Gill Show on Twitter. Follow me there. This has been SB Nation AM.